Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on March 3rd, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
It's our great honor to welcome back Lee Vollmann. Oh, you're not wearing red today.
I probably knew I was going to see half of this movie. And it doesn't call for red.
But there's a lot of red in this. You're wearing a big red hat, a big red scarf. I call it Cries and Whispers Red.
Yes.
How many of you were here last night? We talked for an hour and a half. I had no idea. And you're catching a plane, so we're going to have to speak twice as fast, okay? All right. This film was made in 1968, a year of great unrest and dissent all over the world, especially France, but all over the Western world. And some of this dissent came to Fora, the island where this was shot and where you lived with Bergman. There was dissent in the ranks of the crew.
Well, this is really a continuation of the film he made before.
Shame.
Shame, yes. And which he originally called the Dream of Shame.
Right.
And this is really a war as well, the war of lack of communication, a war of lies. He wrote about making this movie in connection with the war movie, The Shame, that he somehow felt that the whole world was like this island where these people were living. And he describes, I feel that I'm part of someone else's dream that I have been put into. And he felt that on this island, if you allow it, evil will happen and it will go on. And you are surrounded by it, naturally. And at the same time, you know that outside the island, a horrible war is happening, and you see the two of them. They are occupied with something else, while on the screen they see what is happening in Vietnam and what is happening with people fleeing their homes and so. But it somehow doesn't even concern them, because the war they are experiencing is the war between them. At the same time, they are trying to translate it, I feel. And some of that maybe he wrote about is also happening on the island. Animals are killed and people kill themselves because they are told that they are horrible. You know, they said about Ingmar when he died that he made these gloomy, dark movies. And I always protest that, because he didn't. This is a dark movie. And I think this is maybe his most dark movie, because somehow he gave...
Oh, that's for something else.
We're back in the movie. He gave up on something, and at the same time he was searching for something. This is like the end of a cyclist which started with Persona, and then Hour of the Wolf, and then The Shame, and finally this. And you will see that the movies that come after, he somehow leaves the island, he leaves the horror that he himself was feeling. And in the end, he says, you know, this is another movie of my longing for connection, and I don't find it. And I call it the demons around me, and I don't even see what kind of world I am living in. But he knows it. He shows it. He knows it. But and is using movies to work it out. And somehow he did work it out.
Oddly, it is one of his darkest movies thematically, but it's also one of his most beautiful movies visually. It was his first, what he called his first true color film. He had made a film in color, maybe his worst film ever, about, what's it called, About These Women? With Harriet Anderson and Bibi, and I think Erland was in that too. But it, that was kind of conventional Hollywood color. Here he and Sven were trying something different, a muted color. They wanted to make a black and white film in color, I think.
Yes, but they had a lot of discussions, Sven Nykvist, the cinematographer, and him, and they didn't agree on everything. And this was the first film where they quarreled, and they never quarreled before, they never quarreled after, but there was a lot of quarrel between them, because when they saw Rush's, they felt that the color didn't really fit to what they were believing. And there also was a lot of on the set, because this was the time when the young people did the revolution, not the revolution about what was really happening in the world, but a revolution that they all wanted to decide everything, and we were all one company, and everybody had to do the same
like
thing.
Like a Comintern kind of thing.
Yeah.
And well, there's one of Sven's assistants called Ingmar a dictator, which what else is a director? I mean, you know.
Well, you know, this was the time when you stood up. Everybody has the same right to create, the same right to do this, the same right to do this. You never saw that we all have different talents. And one day he stood up just before we were going to shoot this young man, and he said, listen, we are having a meeting, and from now on, Ingmar Bergman, you have to know that all creative decisions, you have to talk to all of us, and we all have to agree on this. And you know, for Ingmar, it became horrible, but he didn't give in, and he said, okay, those who want to work that way, you are welcome, and you can leave now, and you will get your full salary, but this is not how I can work. And actually nobody left, but it was this it was this revolutionary feeling also on the set, and we were making this movie about people not really realizing what is happening in the world, because they are so full of what their own worries is and what their own longing for contact and to be seen and to be heard. And she, this woman, I mean, she's not good. And I always wanted to defend her, you know. I said, well, she believes in the truth. And then I have that long close-up. And, you know, I didn't say to him, you know, I know she is telling the truth. I wasn't going to say that to him. But I thought I would show it in that long close-up when she lies about her marriage and the accident and everything. I thought she was saying the truth. But because the way he wrote it, I knew while I was telling about my story and my love and my husband, I knew she was lying. And it's so strange to believe and want to defend a person and then to have to know, I'm not a good woman. I am lying. I have this sweet little voice, and I'm, you know, I have this sweet little voice, and everything I'm saying is lie. Everything has to be my way. Just as him, look at the breakfast table. Everything has to be his way. The salt should be there, and it's there, and he pushes it back there. They don't make contact, and it's very sad. And at the same time, there is a war in Vietnam, and people were crushed out of their homes, and there is a war on this island, and nobody knows who is guilty. It is a dark movie, but it is a movie that is telling us why we so often fail in the relationship, because we are so into ourselves and so scared, instead of seeing I'm with you and you are with me, and it is a dark movie.
But it was a good experience for you as an actress, because Bergman called it the worst, one of the worst filming experiences he ever had, with The Touch, Winterlight, which surprised me, and it can't happen here, which is the one film we're not allowed to show because Ingmar put it in his will it should never be shown again.
Which one was
it
that?
It Can't Happen Here.
Oh.
Did you ever see it?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm lying. Yeah.
I think there's another reason they wanted colors for your eyes. You have the most piercing blue eyes. Max's aren't bad either, but...
Well, you see, if you really want to know the truth about people, look in their eyes, because whatever they say, you know, somehow their eyes will give it away. But I do know that he was... And I actually told that yesterday. Wondered what kind of reviews he would get on this movie. And I remember we were driving. I was actually leaving to do the Emigrants and the New Land. And we had somehow also left each other, maybe. And in the car, he said, shall we stop and buy a newspaper and see the reviews? And the one who wrote the review was shocked and thought this was very, very dark. And he stopped the car and asked me to read it. And I lied. I gave him a wonderful, wonderful review, reading. And I never thought that, of course, when I walked off the car and into the plane and went to my life, he would be left with the reviews. And he never talked about it later, never. And somehow I felt that's what a lie can be. And I'm very happy I did it at that moment because he cried and he was so relieved at that moment.
Was that Expressen, the Swedish paper?
I don't remember.
Okay, because they said something else, which we won't repeat. Bergman once said that he detested Godard in one interview I read, but he used some techniques from the New Wave in those interviews with the actors.
What did you say?
Bergman said in an interview in the 60s, asked about Jean-Luc Godard, he hated his movies, but he's kind of borrowing a page from him here by inserting those interviews with you and Max and Erland and Bibi. Were those?
Yes, but he wasn't happy with that. I've read later what he has written. He regretted a little that he had done that. And for example, with me, I remember, I didn't see that now, but I remember that I tried to defend lying and not lying. And he cut that, you know, in the middle. And I've always been so angry. But no, I really understand it. Because again, I was trying to defend my...
But those were your
moment.
Own words.
Hmm?
Those were your own words.
Yeah, we all had our own
because
words.
He didn't let you improvise that much in these movies. And he never let you change.
Well, we created it. We were actors. He gave us a wonderful script and you know, created the atmosphere. And then actors are creators too. And improvisation is what you feel on the inside. And like I say, I was portraying a woman who lied a lot. But for me, I wanted her to be truthful. But it happens because of the lines in which she has made. It happens that we know she is lying. But that's fun with actors trying to defend the thing. And then it shows anyway. The close-up where she's talking about her marriage. You know, I blush. I do everything because I know I'm lying. Although I was defending her.
You've said you love close-ups. But not out of vanity. You love it for acting.
I love close-up because you come very close to the truth, like with the eyes, and you come very, very close to the truth. And Ingmar said he often liked to work with women because they were more open to having a naked face. What
Excuse
do you?
Me. Well, I put the timer on because you've got to catch a plane. We only have a few more minutes. Yesterday, we didn't talk about your theater career. I want to talk a little about your theater career. You've had a wonderful career. That was your first love, the theater. You didn't graduate the National Theater School in Norway.
No, I actually, my school was being in a provincial theater and getting a lot of jobs because I was the one young person there. So I learned a lot by actually acting on the stage. And everyone who worked with Ingmar, they are all theater actors.
But you did not start with him in the theater, but you did work with him in the theater in Oslo once.
Yes, we did the six people are looking
six characters in Search of an Author by Perrin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was so great, and it was a sensation in Oslo. Ingmar Bergman is coming here, and he's going to direct in the theater, and I felt kind of good because, you know, he did it also because he knew me at the time. And I said to him, oh, this is great, and the only thing I really don't know how to do, and you must know that since we're going to be on the stage, I don't know how to laugh. And oh, he said, well, you're going to laugh in most of the play. That's the way I've been thinking. And during the whole rehearsal in the car, I would laugh. On the streets, I would laugh. I would scare my little baby. You know, I'd come home and I would laugh and laugh and laugh. And I learned to laugh. But
you wanted to be a comic in the beginning, didn't you? You wanted to do comedy.
I still want to be a comic. Oh, well. It's
well, you are very funny. Much funnier than in the Bergman movies, in fact.
Ingmar was very funny.
Funny.
But, yeah, no. That's why I wasn't in Fanny and Alexander, because, I mean, I got really tired of playing all these neurotic women. And he told, I'm writing this incredible script, and it's a comedy, and it's wonderful. And then it came, and it's Fanny and Alexander. And she certainly wasn't funny, the one he thought I was going to do. And I did, and I regret it so much, and this is the truth. I said, I thought I was funny. I said, I think somebody else has to do your nightmares now. And he never forgave me.
Oh, really?
Never forgave me. And for 1 year, and that's the only time in our long relationship and friendship, that he wrote some letters saying, Dear Mrs. Ullman. He called me for 1 year, Mrs. Ullman. Oh. And then I saw the finished movie with him at the private screening, and he had redone my role, you know, made it younger. Somebody else did it beautifully. And I saw the whole movie, and I cried, and why did I do that? But that was because I thought, finally, I will do a comedy. And nobody knows how funny I could be, because nobody else tried that either, you know.
You're pretty funny.
I'm pretty funny.
Your first role on stage was Anne Frank, Anna Frank.
Yes.
That must have been something.
That was a difference in my life also, to understand what words means. And in the end of Anne Frank, she's sitting there and reading from her diary, and she writes, I believe that deep down all human beings are really good. And she had that short life, and it ended so brutally. And I think if she had survived Anne Frank, maybe she would still have felt the same, but she would have said, I believe that deep down all human beings has the possibility of being good. And that's what that movie is about. The possibility we all have of being good, but we don't grasp it because we are so filled with our own anxieties and lack of being seen instead of seeing people.
I want to quickly talk about your work with UNICEF. You slowed down your acting career in the early 80s to work as a goodwill ambassador for UNICEF.
Yeah, for UNICEF and for International Rescue Committee. And can I just say one thing?
Of
because
course.
That is what this is about. And these people and what their horrifying living is. Because I came to Macau, an island outside of the South China Sea. And people were still coming in boats, refugees. And I came there, and it was full of, at this time, it's 30 years ago, of refugees. And so, and part of that island was closed off, and it says leprosy. And I didn't want to go in. And then there was a Catholic priest there, and he kind of pushed me. So I had to go in because he was watching me, you know. And so I went in, and he was watching me. And there on the other side was lying an old woman. And you know, so much was gone of her face and her hands. And she was sobbing, and she was sobbing like a little baby. And to that story belongs that when I was a child, I had a grandmother who loved me and told me fairy tales and everything, and I would sleep here at the neck. I would always have this wonderful, oh, she smelled, I cannot describe it, and I looked for that smell all my life. And I came to Macau, and I went into the leprosy place, and I didn't want to go in, and this old lady is lying there, and she's crying and sobbing, and I didn't want to do anything with her, and the Catholic priest was looking at me, and so I bent down anyway and held her. And there, for the first time in my life, in her neck, was my grandmother's smell. And that, to me also, is to tell the story that he's telling, but more sadly and without a solution. It is saying that our grandmothers, you and me and all of us, we are part of the refugees, we are part of those who are trying to come to a new land, who have been forced to flee their home with nothing that they did themselves. This is what Ingmar is showing also, that they are seeing on screen what is happening in Vietnam, and they don't care because a bird was dying outside their house. And maybe that bird, if you are religious, you can even believe that God was allowing that bird to fly into their house and fall down and die. And Ingmar isn't religious, but I think sometimes God helped him a little. And when he wrote that, I really mean, because we don't always know that there is a higher power. And this was important, was on the TV screen.
I know you've got to catch a plane to Norway. You're pining for the fjords or something. But you're married to a nice Jewish real estate mogul named Donald. I thought that was kind of interesting. A nice real estate mogul named Donald, right? And you have a daughter by Ingmar named Lynn, who's now a mother herself, too. So you're a gorgeous grandmother of two.
She has a son, 27, who is very far now on being a good film director. He's made two short films, and now he's writing his first feature film, and is here in New York. And she has a daughter who's 14 years old, and I'm going to see her tomorrow.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. I want to plug two things we're doing. We're showing the complete version of Face to Face, 4 hours. I don't think it's ever been shown in the U.S. on March, when is it? March 6th, and we're going to probably repeat it on March 8th, and we're also showing the complete version of your film from Ingmar's script, Private Confessions. I don't think that's ever been shown its complete version here. So I hope you'll come see her film.
Oh, I hope you come specifically to see Private Confessions.
Right.
Because that was written by Ingmar, and I asked him, why are you asking me to do that? Because he was still doing theater, and he was strong and everything. And he said, well, I don't know anyone who believes in God except you, so you have to do that movie.
Okay, we don't have flowers for you today because you're getting on a plane, but we do have a swag bag. Ingmar Bergman swag bag with his devil character. This is very heavy. Film form t-shirts, etc. And you said you love popcorn. This is for the car. And we don't do butter here, but I melted some at home.
So you could, tasted it yesterday.
Okay.
It was really good.
Yeah, it's great. I think it congealed, though. Well, thank you so much. We were going to show a clip, but you have to go. Lee Wollmann.
I'll take that.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.